In a period of political and social turmoil, you can react in a variety of ways. You can take action, you can debate, or you can pull a Monty Python and run away. If you're clever enough, you can even do all three at once. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I will discuss three movies that pretty much cover the full range of reactions to troublesome times. One is Michael Moore's new documentary, Fahrenheit 11-9. One is the study of religion and love titled Disobedience. And one called Pick of the Litter is a look at puppies being trained as guide dogs for the blind. So don't touch that dial, because another edition of Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
When you hear us say, listener-supported public radio, what are we really saying? Public radio is shorthand for thought-provoking, well-crafted, stimulating programs. Listener-supported means it's your money that pays for those programs. And not only the programs, but the transmitters, the computers, the electricity, everything it takes to bring you those programs. So here's a very large thank you to you, the listener, in listener-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that could find a Monty Python quote to fit any occasion, because nobody, but nobody, expects the Spanish Inquisition. Well, except for Michael Moore, the Flint, Michigan-born documentary filmmaker who has been a cinematic slash cultural gadfly since the release of his 1989 film Roger and Me. Moore is back with a new documentary, Fahrenheit 11-9, which explores the nation's turn to the right and the election of Donald Trump. We'll also look at Disobedience, a movie that pits two women in love against the strict rules of Orthodox Judaism, and Pick of the Litter, a heartwarming look at puppies being trained to be guide dogs for the blind. Let's begin with some muckraking. In Roger and Me, Michael Moore, in his trademark comic confrontational way, spends 91 minutes unsuccessfully but hilariously trying to interview General Motors CEO Roger B. Smith, the man he blamed for closing Flint's auto plant, thereby sending the city into a spiral of unemployment and a slow but gradual decline. Over the intervening 30 years, Moore has churned out a steady collection of similar documentaries, all targeting specific cultural issues: gun control in the Oscar-winning Bowling for Columbine, the nation's health system in Sicko, and in Fahrenheit 9/11, how the events of September 11, 2001 affected the nation's rush to war. That final film, released in 2004, is a precursor to this year's Fahrenheit 11-9, which is nothing less than a call to arms for anyone disturbed by current events. Those events range from the lead-infused water in Flint's water system to the 2016 election of Donald Trump as U.S. president. It's hard to see Fahrenheit 11-9, which both references his 2004 film and marks the date on which Trump's election victory was announced, without thinking of stand-up comic Hannah Gadsby's recent Netflix special, Nanette. Gadsby's special turns serious in its second half and becomes basically a rant, an informed, intelligent, and heartfelt rant, to be sure, but a rant all the same, which basically mirrors Moore's film. Oh, he adds his comic touch, his spraying water from Flint's water system on the lawn of the man Moore considers responsible for the mess, Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, is funny. But for the most part, he remains serious, providing more groans than grins. Clearly, Moore has had enough, and I, for one, don't blame him. In 1998, he appeared with Trump on Roseanne Barr's afternoon talk show. Trump said that he'd enjoyed Roger and Me, but hoped that Moore would never do a film about him. Well, it took two full decades, But that film is finally here.
And my main question about Fahrenheit 11-9, having seen it, is what exactly was the point of this movie? I'm still kind of confused because, like that spraying water that he puts all over the governor's lawn, I mean, this movie is off in a million different directions. And I suppose that you could argue that in doing that, more is aping our general intake of information these days because we're getting so much stuff all at once and it's really hard to keep up. But in terms of the Trump material in this movie, there's nothing that we didn't already know. If you're actually paying attention to the news, Michael Moore doesn't tell you anything in this movie that you didn't know before you sat down in the theater. So I think most of the stuff involving the current administration is actually pointless. It's not going to change anybody's mind. I'm not exactly sure what the approach here was. And on top of all of the Trump stuff, he goes after the Democratic Party, Obama specifically, and people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Hillary Clinton.
Yes, correct. He also talks about school shootings. He talks about these grassroots political campaigns like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's an interview subject in this film, and he follows her around as she's knocking on doors. He even talks about that false alarm missile crisis that happened in Hawaii, which I had completely forgotten about until Michael Moore brought it up. He's kind of just grabbing all of these straws at once, and it sometimes feels a little bit desperate and all over the place. I mean, it's a Michael Moore film, so of course it's put together in a generally snappy and interesting way. The stuff that felt the freshest, that felt like it had the most purpose, was this stuff about Flint. I mean, that's where Michael Moore is from. He's the most famous resident of Flint, Michigan. And so he's going after this governor, and he's talking about in a way that I'd never seen laid out before about the water crisis.
I
thought that stuff was great. It made me wonder, why is he bothering with any of this other stuff? There's kind of a running thing. You mentioned him and Trump being on Roseanne's talk show, and who would have ever thought that 20 years from now we'd be talking about Donald Trump and Roseanne Barr still? Weird time. So he does kind of implicate himself even in the way that the Donald Trump has been portrayed in the media. So some of that stuff was good. But it's the Flint material here that I think works, and it's this big hour-long chunk in the middle of the film, and then there's all this other stuff going on, and he tries to tie it all together, but this feels like the first draft of a thesis or something, and a bunch of stuff needed to be cut out. But there's good stuff in here. I'm just not exactly sure what was he going for. I mean, I look at the title and I think, is he just trying to take the temperature of the nation at this time? And of course it's going to be scattered and all over the place, but I don't really know what he was going for here. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I feel the same way totally, especially about the Flint piece of it, because I think that it would have been possible in Fahrenheit 11-9, of course, he would have had to change the title, to use that crisis as a microcosm for a number of other things that have gone wrong. Mm-hmm. And that whole tension between big business, who apparently owned Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, and he could have brought together all of his previous themes in terms of capitalism and outsiders and so forth. And that's where I thought this was going to go. I thought he was going to speak more to people who had been disillusioned, maybe who were former Trump supporters who had been wildly enthusiastic or at least interested in Trump's becoming president to make a statement or something along those lines, and then see how, like the people in Flint, they felt as though they had been done wrong. But instead,
and certainly you could find people like that in Flint, right?
I would imagine. Mm. But instead, he uses the Flint thing to sort of push back against Obama. And I'm not saying that that was unjustified.
Right.
But it does go in a different direction. And so then you're sort of like, well, then what is the title 11-9? So was it supposed to be focused on Trump? Was it supposed to be focused on all the ills of all the government officials who've ever lived at various levels of government? I don't know. So I agree with you, Nathan. In the end, Fahrenheit 11-9 really was kind of a mess with some beneficial aspects to it. Owen Lieberman in Variety wrote a piece that said how Michael Moore lost his audience. And I guess I disagree a little bit about that, because where he concludes that, oh, well, maybe children of the 60s, you know, baby boomers, they don't go to the movies anymore. So why did he even make this? And that just seemed like a bit of a ridiculous premise in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm of two minds here. And I tried to explain that in the intro, because on one hand, I agree with both of you that there could have been a sharper focus to this film. His better films, Bowling for Columbine, for example, was
more single-issue oriented.
Right. Right.
Sicko, Bowling for Columbine, right. Capitalism, A Love Story.
I mean, and that, which
Roger
is,
and
which,
Me.
Right, which is what we expect out of a filmmaker who is as intelligent and as astute and as talented as Moore is. On the other hand, as a reflection of someone who is so frustrated in what the political atmosphere is, which I think is a reflection of many of us today, as a reflection of that and as an attempt to say there is no simple solution to this and there's no simple answer to this, because any way you turn, look at what the Democrats have done. Look at Obama drinking Flint water in front of people and thereby undermining the absolute integrity of the people who were complaining about Flint at the time. I think that he's trying to create, in a way, as I called it, a rant, unfortunately, in a way that says we're all complicit in this. And what is going on today, we have got to get ourselves together and we've got to pull this country together in a way in which we can all understand what's going on. Otherwise, there is no hope.
I can see that argument. At the same time, I think that that argument is cogent enough. I mean, this is a long movie, too. It's over two hours long. It's got to be one of his longer films. I think if he had trimmed a lot of the excess stuff here, that would have come through a little bit clearer, because as it stands, Fahrenheit 11.9 just kind of feels like a grab bag of all these different issues that are important. They probably all deserve the documentary treatment individually, but I think lumping them all together, how is that any different than watching Rachel Maddow or watching CNN for an hour? You see all that stuff. It's like, oh, now we have to talk about this issue. Now we have to talk about this issue. Yes, they are all intertwined. I mean, all of these things are connected. And he does make the comment saying, like, well, Trump is a symptom of all of these things, or whatever you want to call it. And I see what he's going for, but it just feels like there's too much happening here.
Well,
and on top of that, his argument is like, well, yeah, I think everyone that's going to go see this movie agrees with you. And so,
well,
what's
that's our
the point,
that's our
you know?
Eternal question. We've had this question about his prior films.
Mm-hmm.
Is he just speaking to a select group of people?
And preaching to the choir.
Yeah, exactly. So in Fahrenheit 11.9, who is seeing this movie? Well, apparently it didn't get good box office.
No.
And even talking to people who I know, who I naturally assumed would go to see it, they were like, well, no, I'd rather go see Pick of the Litter.
Because there was one other person in the theater when I saw this. And I think it's because we know all this stuff already. We see this all the time. I'm tired of seeing Donald Trump on social media. Why would I go? I mean, I went to the movie to review it, obviously, but why would I go?
Were you able to talk any of your friends to go with you?
Yes, a friend of mine went and we had red vines. It was great. I don't know. I'm tired of seeing Donald Trump's weird hair on my phone screen. Why would I want to see it on the big screen? It's so much more horrifying. I think that's why people didn't go. I think it's because they thought what
Donald Trump's
what,
hair was the reason.
No,
they
I think
didn't go.
I think the reason they didn't go is because
I
they
it was
thought
Gwen Stefani.
I think they went. They thought, what is Michael Moore going to tell me I don't already know? If he had made a movie about the Flint water crisis, I think it would have been could have been really, really good.
Crisis, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was Fahrenheit 11.9. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Disobedience and Pick of the Litter. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mayor Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Michael Moore's documentary Fahrenheit 11-9. Let's now move to Disobedience, a film about the clash between two women in love and the Orthodox religion in which they both were raised. Then we'll discuss Pick of the Litter, a movie about puppies trying to be guide dogs for the blind. Let's begin with a movie that could take, as a subtitle, the title of a D.H. Lawrence novel. That novel, of course, is Women in Love, which is one way to describe the characters of Ronit and Esty, played respectively by Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. The two were childhood friends until their closeness became a little too close, and Ronit left, or was forced to leave, it's not clear which, the London-based Orthodox Jewish community headed up by her rabbi father. When Dad dies, in the middle of a service no less, Ronit, working as a photographer in New York, returns home to pay her respects. She discovers that Esty is married to another childhood friend, Dovid, played by Alessandro Nivola, who has been groomed to take the late rabbi's place. Pretty soon, the heat between Ronit and Esty is rekindled, and it becomes clear that something important, if not actually dire, is going to happen, because things certainly cannot remain the same, not for anyone. Directed by Chilean-born filmmaker Sebastian Lelo and adapted by Lelo and screenwriter Rebecca Linkowitz from a 2006 novel by English writer Naomi Alderman, Disobedience doesn't plow any new ground in terms of plot. We've seen this kind of culture clash before, even with the same-sex love twist. But Lelo treats his characters with compassion and empathy. The cast is first-rate, and Lelo's use of music gives his film, at times, an operatic feel that even D.H. Lawrence might appreciate.
There's much to like about this film, most notably its two leading actresses. I really have appreciated watching Rachel McAdams grow over time, but I'm not sure I would have predicted a career for her based on The Notebook, for example.
Or Mean Girls.
Right, way back when. So I was very happy to see her in this film. And Rachel Weisz always commands the screen. To me, as though I almost had too much context for what was happening in this Orthodox Jewish community and too little, because this is supposed to be modern times and we never really get a sense of why Esty, the Rachel McAdams character, ends up in this particular situation, given what we ultimately learn about her and her past sort of friendship with Ronit, the Rachel Weisz character, and so forth. The other thing I want to say, because I'm always usually focused on the performances, Alessandro Nivola has been kind of missing recently, and he, I thought, really had to walk a fine line here in terms of being a credible character with a commitment to his religious devotion and being a real person. And I thought he really pulled that off. But I'm not ultimately sure what the movie is saying to us or telling us. I thought Gloria was a much more powerful
previous movie, yes.
At least if we're talking about gender relations, if we're talking about love, if we're talking about culture and tradition and so forth.
Yeah, and we need to point out, we saw this movie online. We saw it on
Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think Gloria is still his best movie. I mean, I think that Fantastic Woman was probably seen by more people and won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film, but I think Gloria is still a really good movie. And Disobedience, I mean, this is the third movie I can think of that's come out in the last, I don't know, 5 years that's about Orthodox Judaism in New York, this particular community. You had Fading Gigolo, which was that horrible, horrible John Turturro, Woody Allen comedy.
I didn't even know
where Vanessa Paradis was in this community, and that was just totally phony. And then you had Menasha,
right,
which came out last year, and people should really look for that because that was a really interesting film. That had an almost documentary realism to it. It was a narrative film. But,
right. I would point out that this takes place in North London, but the, setting doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
It's confusing.
But it
could have
been
New York,
because, you're not even really sure because it's so sealed off. And and I believe that the Rachel Weisz character works in New York
and she goes
to London.
Yeah.
So that's why my brain was jumbled there. But this is sort of in between those two movies because it is more naturalistic than something like Fading Gigolo, but it does have kind of a tragic sweep to it, as you mentioned, likening it to D.H. Lawrence. And I actually think that's not a bad comparison. But I agree with you, Mary Pat, in that everything about this movie is put together just so. The performances are great. I think the two central performances are really special. But it is missing something. It's not a great film. It's a really good one. But you're right. The movie ends and you think, well, Okay. But I'm not really sure what it was about necessarily, but as a showcase for these two performances, I think it's still worth seeing. And I think that this idea of, you know, we're in the 21st century, but these people are deliberately sealing themselves off from a lot of things that we just have – daily conveniences, I think, is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a fine movie. But I wish it were better.
I second what MP says. What I think this movie needed was more of a sense of why these people are in this community and why Esty in particular. Because Esty and Ronit had a relationship which caused Ronit to leave in the first place.
Right.
Yet Esty stays. Why does Esty stay? Does she stay because she's committed to religion? Does she stay because she has no other alternative?
You're right. We never really get a sense of. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And if he'd just taken a few minutes to try to develop that more. Because let's face it, when Ronit comes back, Esty immediately is drawn to her. And therefore, that's how the rest of the film proceeds. But by the way, we have to point out, there's a long and involved and very erotic love scene between Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams that reminded me, what was the French film again?
Blue is the warmest color.
Oh, no, it's nothing like that.
It's nothing like that. But it's much more than simply kissing.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
But it's not blue is the warmest color territory. Let's just get that out of the way.
All right. That was Disobedience. Let's close with a tale about doggies. And who doesn't like dogs, especially when they're just pups? The dogs of the documentary Pick of the Litter, though, are anything but ordinary. They are trained basically from birth to be guide dogs for the blind. As such, they undergo an extensive regimen, first with voluntary trainers termed puppy raisers, sometimes more than one, and then if they make the cut, they are paired with professionals. Only then, and only if they can pass a series of tests, which include everything from walking along a city or suburban sidewalk and avoiding cars to simple obedience, will they be paired with a blind owner. If they don't, they either become breeders of a whole new generation of puppies in training, or they are career changed, a euphemism for washing out, and likely to end up living as someone's pet. Co-directed by Don Hardy Jr. and Dana Nachman, and basically an advertisement for the San Rafael, California-based organization Guide Dogs for the Blind, the movie follows five dogs, Patriot, Poppet, Primrose, Potomac, and Phil, during their training, which can take as much as 2 years. Like a competition reality show and reflecting the fact that of 800 dogs bred each year, barely 300 end up passing the program, we watch as some of the five get, in survivor terms, kicked off the island. So there is enough drama, both among the dogs and the humans, including, yes, one veteran with PTSD, to entertain everybody. Drama and a whole lot of face licking.
Yeah, this does feel like an extended episode of like a TLC show or something like that. It's a pretty flimsy documentary, but you would kind of have to be a monster to dislike it. I mean, it is so sweet, and it does have some genuinely moving things when you learn about the owners who's actually going to get these dogs. I wanted to know more about the history of seeing iDogs. I think if they had done like a 10-minute chunk that kind of explained
who even
came up with that
short
idea.
It's only 80 more minutes long.
Right, yeah, exactly, which is why it feels like if you cram two or three episodes of a TV show together, it kind of feels like
Well, there are a couple of places that I would have liked a little more info because they do switch these dogs up, and at least at one point, this one couple is like ticked off. That
they take the dog away from them.
I think the term she uses is blindsided as
insensitive. Ironically, yes.
Well, yeah, and you never really get a sense of, well, why was the dog taken away? Does this happen very often? I wanted this to maybe even be a little more inside baseball because actually watching the dogs progress, and I love that Phil. That Phil was the best. You do kind of get to know these dogs' personalities. Watching them progress was actually really cool, but it needed a little bit more.
And you can sort of figure out
it's kind of light.
The number of dogs, because if you pay attention to the humans and do the math, you can sort of figure out the number of dogs who are going to progress.
Right.
But you can't necessarily predict
with
complete accuracy who they will be. And I'm like the quintessential cat person, and I loved this movie. I thought it was so sweet, and I love the dogs. And
some of the poor humans who have to say goodbye. I wanted to say, go get a pet dog.
That's what Dan kept saying. Get your own animal companion.
Yeah, I watched it with my doggie.
Oh, Lady Bird?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was on the couch next to me.
It's not a guide dog for the blind?
Oh, God, no. That'd be a disaster.
And that was Pick of the Litter. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Fahrenheit 11.9 and Disobedience. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevin for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to separate cinema wheat from cinema chaff. Until then, remember these words from Michael Moore. Openness, transparency. Those are among the weapons the citizenry has to protect itself from the powerful and the corrupt. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.